You are listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast produced by Veteran Strategies and featuring conversations with fascinating and impactful men and women who have shaped our world, our communities, and our history. My name is Robert Vane, principal of Veteran Strategies, and your host for our discussion. You are listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast presented by Veteran Strategies, an Indiana-based public relations enterprise, and sponsored by Garmon Construction, Leaders and Legends LLC, the Grand Hall and Conference Center at Historic Union Station, the McGinley's Golden Ace Inn, and NFP, a national insurance broker with strong local content. Our podcast is featured on the All Indiana Podcast Network in partnership with Wish TV. You may find Leaders and Legends at allindianapodcastnetwork.com. Thinking of starting a podcast or need to host a public meeting? Let Leaders and Legends LLC be your partner as you look for new ways to communicate your message. Please contact Chris Spangle or me at leadersandlegends.net. And as always, all our podcast interviews are dedicated to the legacy and generosity of P.E. McAllister.
I thought I'd have to choose between an IT degree and certifications until I found WGU. There, I earned both through one program. WGU prepared me to earn certs from CompTIA and others at no extra cost. WGU IT bachelor's and master's degrees have no set class times. Rather, students progress at their pace, completing as many courses as they can each six-month term. I graduated faster, and you could too. Learn more at wgu.edu.
Howie Politics and State Affairs Pro offer insider election coverage, polling, and analysis in Indiana. Our nonpartisan news and legislative tools create a winning combination pro subscribers can't live without. For all the resources you need this election season and beyond, visit pro.stateaffairs.com/IN. That's pro.stateaffairs.com/IN.
Thank you for joining us on the Leaders and Legends podcast. Our guest today is the mayor of Zionsville. You perhaps know him better as John Stair, Anchorman. He has made the transition. He is doing amazing things. He won in I call it a landslide, wouldn't you, Jim?
Yeah.
If you look at the numbers.
My campaign manager told me that 10 points is an ass kicking. Can I say ass kicking?
You can.
Oh, good.
That qualifies.
Yes. Okay, great.
Who was your campaign manager?
Megan Umloff.
I was going to say Megan. She's wonderful.
She was
very
great.
Smart.
She
very
was
smart.
Great. Yes.
John came here in the 80s, first at Wish.
Right here at
Wish TV.
Channel 8, you bet.
And then an entire generation of Hoosiers know him as the anchor for one of the anchors, lead anchor from WTHR. We're going to have a conversation with him. I've been trying to get him on the podcast for a while. You didn't know this, but I've been trying for a while, and I'm very grateful for your time.
I'm glad to be here.
And we are joined, as we usually are, by Hall of Famer. Is Hall of Famer a higher rank than mayor?
Well, yeah, I'm a Hall of Famer, too.
That's why I'm asking. Do you want me to introduce you as Hall of Famer?
No, I don't care.
John's in a different Hall of Fame than I am, which just tells you that there are too many Hall of Fame.
He's in the Broadcaster Association Hall of Fame. You are?
That's what I am, yes. I'm very proud of that. That was a nice honor.
And we are joined by Jim Shella, who makes these podcasts so much better. And we're going to start the questions with the fact that you two worked together in Grand Rapids.
We did.
A long time ago.
Okay, and I'm gonna start with the story here.
So go ahead.
As I was leaving Channel 8, mm-hmm. our boss, Lee Giles, said to me, I was heading out the door, and he said, our political reporter is retiring, or he's leaving to go with his wife to Detroit. Do you know anybody who might want to come in and be a political reporter here? And I said, I don't know. There's this guy that I work with in Grand Rapids. He may be looking for a change. Why don't you give him a call? So now I walked out the door, and the rest is history. I guess Lee made the call. You answered. And
well, you called me. You called me.
I did?
You did. You did.
Wow. On a landline? Would have been a landline in those days.
Yes, it was. I was not looking for a job at the time. You called and said that there was an opening here and that I should apply for it. And so I did.
And the year was?
That was 1982.
1982, yeah.
Did you come here in time to do the Floyd Fithian, Richard Lugar Senate race?
No, I got here.
Once Lugar almost lost.
A month later. That was in November. Mm-hmm. I started in December. My first day on the job, December 13, 1982, was the first day of a special session to raise taxes.
We don't have those anymore. Thank God.
That's right. Wow. And it very nearly cost Bob Orr re-election in 84.
Yeah. I don't recall actually making a call to you, but I'm glad I did.
I recall it. And so I replaced you on the Manning chart at Wish TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in a different role. I did a show here that was called Nightbeat.
Yeah.
And it was a sort of a local Nightline kind of show. It was on at 10:30 at night, and it was one or two subjects and long form interviews and that kind of thing. And it was when the station was being sold at one point. I guess it's been sold a few times, right, since then. But they were trimming down the budget to make it more saleable, and I was one of the people that was trimmed.
And so, when did you get here to Wish TV?
1981. Yes.
It's funny, in our interview with Debbie Knox, when was she first featured on Wish TV, when she was for the 500?
Right about the same time.
She said that she appeared on Wish TV when she was a beauty queen in the 500 festival. And that would have been when she was in high school, which would have been in the 70s.
70s, yeah. That's right.
But we started working here about the same time.
And you did?
And when I left, she moved into my office, and I've apologized to her several times over the years, because there was a pipe that was, I don't know, it would sweat. The pipe would sweat. So there was probably some mold somewhere in that room.
So you were the one who brought Jim here.
No, I wouldn't say
actually,
that.
Actually, truth be known.
No, in politics, we say these things.
Oh, you say
right. We hyperbolize, okay. Whatever right. It is.
Do I get credit or blame for that?
Actually,
I don't know.
Actually, truth be known, I think there was a fellow named Jack Hogan who was probably responsible for both of us getting here. He was the news director at the ABC affiliate in Grand Rapids, and Wish TV news director Lee Giles had gone to college with Jack. And when Jack wanted somebody out of the market, he would call Lee.
There was a pretty good pipeline from Grand Rapids to Indianapolis.
Did you guys stay in touch a lot once Jim got here, or was it just two different stations?
Two different stations, two different worlds. I moved out to Salt Lake City after I left here, so we were pretty regionally and time zone separated and all that. But
yeah.
Who did you replace as the political reporter?
Bob Rosbach was a State House reporter.
Remember as a kid, grew up in Irvington, was born in 67. We only watched Channel 8 because Ahern is Catholic.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, we're Catholic. So it was like that was the reason to watch it. But I remember Jim Wilson on sports, who was before then in the 70s. Yeah. It was the big news. Was that what it was when you guys got here?
We were Indiana's own, I think.
Yeah.
Ed Harding was our sports guy. We had Stan, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Stan
was a new Center 8.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So let me ask a question about technology, because when I have David Barris come on the podcast, TWD,
yeah.
Teresa Wells-Denton
sure.
has come on, and others, I like to ask this question. I'm assuming that people are relatively the same. Maybe it's a little different these days, but it seems to me the difference is technology. John, when you came into the news business, what was the technology, and was there any sort of technological improvement or innovation that made you go, oh my God, wow?
I started in 1977, and I worked at a station in Erie, Pennsylvania, where we still had film, and you had to put the film through the soup to get it to come out. It took about 45 minutes, so nothing was very immediate. And when I moved to Grand Rapids, I was just shocked that we had a live truck, and oh my gosh, we could go live from anywhere. And back in those days, they would send an engineer along with the live truck, and they would be there with a slide rule kind of thing to try to figure out which way to point the dish? The golden rods to connect with the ditch. And if you were on the bottom of a hill, you couldn't do it. And fortunately, Grand Rapids is fairly flat, so you could get that shot in from a lot of different places. But yeah, the idea that we could go live was just absolutely mind-boggling to me.
I started my career in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and we were using film. And I was surprised when we both worked at WOTV, the NBC affiliate in Grand Rapids. It's now called Wood TV. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, they didn't have film anymore. Everything was videotaped. And they were ahead of the curve on that. They were behind the curve on the live truck, though, because the reason I got hired is because I had experience doing live shots in Cedar Rapids, and they wanted somebody with experience to go out on their new live truck. And the engineer came along because the engineers were union, and they insisted they insisted that those of us who weren't union couldn't accomplish that without them. And I'll tell you a story afterward about how that meant that I got blamed for mistakes an engineer made on one occasion.
There was I'll tell you another story. There was a very sensitive story that was on the air, and it was in the very early days of when we talked about sexual harassment and that sort of thing. And there was a woman who was telling her story, and it was so sensitive in nature that the image was blacked out. And an engineer was walking through the control room and saw this on the screen and said, "Oh, geez." Turned up the gain. The gain the color temperature. So this woman was recognizable. And again,
who sued whom?
This was a union engineer and didn't lose their job over that, but it was quite the thing in the town. There was, I think there were lawsuits.
I'm happy to tell you that television station was owned by Time Incorporated,
right,
which meant that we had the same benefits as the folks at the magazine, which included an extra week of vacation for everybody who worked in news.
Right.
So there were advantages to being there, but it was poorly run.
Yeah. And we also got free magazines. So whenever... you could pick. So Time, Sports
Illustrated. Actually, when I got there, you got Time, Sports Illustrated, and People. And eventually they said, "We can't give you all of those. You got to pick one."
Oh, okay. Well, I was there for all three. So that was nice.
So challenge the premise of my last question.
Yeah.
Have people in the news business changed? And have the people you covered changed?
I don't know the people we've covered have changed that much. I think they're people doing other things and living different kind of lives. I think the people in news perhaps have changed somewhat. It's a much more technical job now. You have to have a lot of skills coming into it. I think when I started, I did shoot some film initially, but I wasn't very good at it. And if I would have had to make my career that way, I wouldn't have gone very far. But nowadays, you have to shoot the video, you have to edit the video, you have to write the story, you have to edit the story, you have to write a version for the web. And there's just a lot more to it now. And most of the people are going out on their own. They don't have any companionship or any help throughout the day.
Yeah, it's a very different job. Back in the 80s, we would do one story a day. I was fond of telling people, we do one story a day. If there are four, we do one. If there are none, we do one. But you would spend all day, and if you needed to talk to five sources, you'd talk to five sources. Now, you have to do so many versions of the story, there's just not that much time to develop it, and everything still has to get done within a day.
And there's more time to fill, so there's just more to do. It has changed quite a bit.
You're listening to the Leaders and Legends podcast. Our guest is John Stair. He is the mayor of Zionsville and lead anchor before he retired, WTHR. Do you have, not to put you on the spot about TV news, do you have some folks who you miss working with at 13? Because there are some, I have a fondness for Rich Van Wyk. I can't help it. But is there people you're like, man, I used to see them every day and now I don't?
Absolutely. Rich and Dave McAnally and John Whalen. I don't know if you know John.
Oh, yeah, really well. Trivia master.
We get together every 6 weeks or so and just tell old stories and make up lies and do all that kind of stuff that retired guys do. But I miss day to day. I do miss Anne Marie. She's one of my best friends. Angela Buckman is one of my best friends. I know she left here. Maybe I shouldn't say her name in this building, but she certainly is a good friend. And Chris Wright has been a great friend. And I do miss seeing
Rich Nye's been around a long time. Good person.
Oh, Rich Nye's a great guy.
So his sister's a better person.
Is that right?
Oh, his sister's wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. So I do miss the day to day interaction with those folks. I don't miss the job. I think the business has changed so dramatically that toward the end, it was hard for me, honestly, to go to work every day.
How did it change?
As Jim said, when you started out, you could talk to five sources a day. You could do stories that had some depth. And I always took it as a responsibility that we're the conduit of information to people. It's the free exchange of information foundational to a democracy and to our society. I think with so many sources of information, it has changed so much over the years that now a lot of it is getting eyes on the TV set to sell cars for somebody. And
you know, clicks, it's about clicks on the internet. It's about having a catchy headline and expecting that people may not read the story.
Yeah. And I can tell you, and I'm sure Jim would say the same thing, I never knew what the ratings were in the beginning. In the first 10 years that I was in the business, that just wasn't a factor.
They didn't share them or wasn't?
Actually, it was mostly a sales tool. Right. It wasn't widely known in the newsroom, but to the degree it was known, we only learned them every quarter.
A couple times a year when the ratings periods took place.
And but, now, by comparison, they come out every morning now.
Right. Yeah. Now it's all digital. Yeah.
Chartbeat and other places.
Yeah. And,
like, and
I think broadcasters, they could use the news departments as lost leaders. They felt a responsibility to provide that free flow of information. And I think the traditional broadcasters felt strongly about that. And they made so much money in other places that they could afford to do it. I think the landscape is so much more competitive now that they can't afford to do it, and news departments are counted on to bring in revenue.
Absolutely true. We talked about you're originally from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Started your career in Pennsylvania. You went to Michigan. You came here. You went to Salt Lake City. Then you went to New York for a couple of jobs before coming back to WTHR.
Yeah.
You were what I refer to as a broadcasting nomad.
Yes. For a long time, I was. Yes.
Which is common for a lot of us. And yet you found a place to settle down and have a long career, which doesn't always happen.
No, I consider myself to be very fortunate. And what happened was when I was my last job in New York was I was at CBS, and I was one of the correspondents for the network. And I was traveling probably 50% of the time. And I had a young family at the time, and that wasn't, you know, that equation wasn't really working for everybody. I thought that if I came back here, I would have maybe not the best schedule. I had nighttime hours, but at least I had a regular schedule and I could make that work. And one of the things that came out of that was because I was around in the mornings, I was like the dad volunteer for all the school field trips because they want to have a dad to keep the boys under control. The moms aren't as good as doing that. So I became a regular and I went to Conner Prairie about four times. Nothing ever changes there. Have you noticed that? They're so stuck in the past. And I've done the Zionsville History Tour four or five different times. I've been to the ballet at Butler. So all those field trips that all the kids took, I was able to go along and be a chaperone. So that was a little blessing in that. And we have good memories of that. We still talk about that.
I find it interesting that you had a stop in Indianapolis and then you ended up back here. What brought you back?
It was funny. So what happened was, do we have time for this story? I hope this isn't too boring, but I was in New York and there was a guy in Pittsburgh who had some substance issues and he had several instances on the air and they finally said, okay, enough. You're out. We can't. He was the Mike Ahern in Pittsburgh. He was somebody who'd been there a long time, very well thought of, but they just couldn't do it anymore. So my mother said to me when I was home for Christmas, she said, hey, why don't you apply for that job? And I said, I'm at the network. I don't know if I want to come back to a local station, but I could see the benefits of doing that and having a regular schedule and all that. So I had my agent send a tape back in the days when we sent tape and they looked at it and they were considering me for the job. So I went in and I cut a demo in their studio and was talking to them. And what happens in the business sometimes is that when you are in that kind of situation, other stations hear about it because now you're in play and they start to think, well, this guy's looking to move. So maybe we should talk to him if we're interested. And I got a reach out from John Butte here in Indianapolis. And the pitch was, you've been here before and we're looking to make some big changes here. We have a new commitment and a new set and new people. And we really want to do good things here. And would you be interested? And at first I thought, no, I've been to Indianapolis, been there, done that. Why would I want to go back? But the pitch was compelling. And when I made my list of pluses and minuses for each place, Indianapolis was on the plus side pretty much every different category. The only difference was I grew up there, didn't grow up here.
You grew up in Pittsburgh?
I grew up in Pittsburgh, yeah. Everything else pointed toward Indianapolis. And it's been a great career. It's been a great ride. And if you ask me today what my hometown is, I will tell you Zionsville. I've been in Zionsville longer than I've been anywhere. 30 years now.
Did you ever, I guess it would be Jim who would talk smack about the Wish TV to THR Pipeline. Sandra Chapman, right?
Well, when you talk about
John Stair, Angela Buckman, who else we got?
Dick Ray.
Todd Swan and Anne-Marie Tiernan, who left town and then came back, much as John did. When he talks about the pluses of going to WTHR, I think big on the plus list has to be the ownership.
Yes.
Because WTHR came under the ownership of the Wolf family from Columbus, Ohio. Who they owned the Columbus Dispatch newspaper, and they owned Channel 10 in Columbus. And they made a huge investment in all of their properties.
Yes.
They were all dominant. When they bought Channel 13, it was a bad number three.
Yes.
And they made it a dominant number one. And they did it by opening the pocketbook.
Yeah. And because they had Channel 10 in Columbus, that was a CBS affiliate. And I was at CBS. So in affiliate dinners and things like that, I got to know John Wolfe. And so there was a personal connection there too, which in broadcasting really isn't a thing anymore. But back then it was, and it meant a lot.
Right. You mentioned
but one of the things, just to your point, one of the things they did in order to compete in the market was identify where the talent was and make offers that drew talent away from Wish TV, which had been number one, to WTHR.
Yeah, we used to have support group meetings for former Wish employees, which was always fun. So, yes, there was a definite pipeline there.
I'm going to go back to something you said that it sounds intuitively true, but elaborate if you would, please. And that is, I was at the network. Why would I go back to local news? And I get, obviously, you're in New York City, market number one, but how much of a different vibe is it? Is the network the big leagues and everything else is triple or double A, no matter how big the city is?
I don't know. Can I say yes?
I think you can.
There is definitely a difference there. The amount of support you get, the kind of stories that you can do, the budget that you have to do them, everything is on a much different level there. But at the end of the day, I had a couple of experiences where I would wake up in hotel rooms and have to find the phone book. Remember phone books? Find out where I was. I would forget where I was. And I have a young family at home, and that wasn't, and I just wasn't there for them. On a human level, this was certainly a much better place to be. And I'm glad that I'm here. And I have nothing to feel badly about. I think it's been a great career. It's been a great ride. And we kept, sorry, Jim, but we kept Channel 13 at the top for a generation. And I think, what more can you say? That was a great opportunity for me and a great ride.
And how much was that helped, or not at all, by the tremendous run NBC had
with
its prime time? Because I remember when Channel 6 was NBC and 13 was ABC. And they switched early 80s or late 70s, something like that.
They switched for the Indianapolis 500. It was in the late 70s, I think, that switched. We benefited greatly. In the early part of my time at Channel 13, ER was the number one show on television. And they would come in with 30, 35, 40 ratings. We dropped off after that, but we had changed our average for the week to the point where nobody could touch us. It was a great opportunity for us.
Ever try to poach this guy?
I don't
know.
That might have been going on at a much higher level. But no, I don't.
I never had any discussions with folks at WTHR. I can tell you that one day I was at a sandwich shop in line behind the general manager at Channel 6, who asked me if I'd ever considered going to Channel 6. And I told him I got a contract, and that was the end of that discussion.
Because was doing really well, too, for a while with Dion and
six was, they were number one in the market in the 80s. I think late 80s, early 90s, Wish took over.
Yeah. When Howard Caldwell retired, that
Hal Hornet, by the way.
What's that?
He went to that same high school I did. There a little before my time.
He was in a class at Butler with my father-in-law, who passed away a couple years ago at the age of 93. So he and Howard had a class or a couple of classes together in journalism Butler.
Did you watch, I'm going to say Jim, because of the two reporters I ever worked with on TV, the two who, in my experience, knew their beats the best.
Mm-hmm.
One was Jim Shella, and the other was Jack Reinhart, public safety and crime for Channel 6. Did you watch other stations? They're doing this. Why aren't we doing this?
Absolutely. And not only that, if you were doing the same stories, to see how each station would approach it, and you would make a judgment on who covered it better. I don't want his head to grow any bigger than it already is.
He's not wearing a headset.
That's a good thing, because it would break the headset. But clearly, Jim was the gold standard when it came to political reporting here in Indiana for all those years. And you just don't, Jim Shellas don't grow on trees. And I met Garrett Berquist,
who's
here now. Great young man. I think he might have a great future ahead of him, but it's going to take a while before he's going to be another Jim Shellas. I don't think that those people come along very often. And he definitely is the gold standard in politics.
Thank you.
We agree.
To your point, back when we were in Grand Rapids, one of the things we did in Grand Rapids was record the competition every night.
Right.
Back in the days before the internet, we would roll tape on the competition, and I would come in the next morning and see how the competition handled a story. And I can't tell you how many times I would watch one of their stories and see an angle that I think they didn't develop properly and go out and essentially take their story away from them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast presented by Veteran Strategies, an Indiana-based public relations enterprise, and sponsored by Garmond Construction, Leaders and Legends LLC, the Grand Hall and Conference Center at Historic Union Station, the McGinley's Golden Ace Inn, and NFP, a national insurance broker with strong local content. Our guest today is the mayor of Zionsville, John Stair. We are joined, as we often are, by Jim Shellas. John, is there a particular Hoosier leader and or legend you admire most?
In my time here?
Yes, sir.
I think that there would be no question that it's Mitch Daniels. I think I appreciated his approach. I appreciated his sensibilities. And I think he guided the state. If we remember, you know, what was going on in the state at the time that he was there. And you look at some of our peer states around us. Indiana did much better weathering that storm of the economic downturn in the mid to late 2000s because of him, because of the work that Mitch Daniels did.
We're going to get to your time and running for mayor in Zionsville. I'm going to ask you a few big stories.
Okay.
You've done some significant interviews, especially I love the one with Richard Lugar.
Yes.
Who is, if Jim Morris isn't the answer to the question I just asked, and it's not Richard Lugar, it's Mitch Daniels.
Right.
So what's it like to be in the situation where you're talking with significant public figures and you have to craft a story that's both honest and perhaps, and Jim and I've talked about this before, perhaps not something they're going to embrace?
Significant public figures are really no different than you and me. And I've always had this sensibility. I've never been awestruck meeting anybody. Just because I know that they get up in the morning and they put on their pants the same way and they have bad breath and their stomach rumbles until they get breakfast. They're really just the same as you as me. You and me, the difference is they're more famous than you and me. So I've never really thought about it that way. I will say something about Senator Lugar, though. I went on a trip with him to Russia back in the days of the Strategic Arms Limitation Agreement. And he was approached more by Russians on the street than when he would walk down the street in Indiana. He was a true international figure and a significant international figure. And I hope that we appreciated him while he was here. I certainly did, because he was doing work on a much grander scale than
I worked for a Lugar Super PAC in 12. And it was just mind-bogglingly stupid. Yeah.
But can I tell you
that primary election?
Can I just tell one quick Mitch Daniels story? And I don't know if you were there that day, but when he was talking about running for president, and this is the kind of stuff that we could do at Channel 13 that our competition didn't do. So I went back to Washington and I interviewed him in his office. He was the director of the Office of
Management. You talking about running for governor?
Yes. And he was thinking about running for governor. And he was going to announce. We all knew it. And he was cagey with me and we talked about it. And so we did this story and sent it back. And the next day, I go to the airport, right? And I get on the plane coming back to Indianapolis, and I see Mitch Daniels on the plane. So I thought, oh, this is great. So I strike up a conversation with him, and we talk on the flight. And as we get off the plane, we're still talking. And there's that long hallway in the old airport that you used to have to walk down, and all the reporters were lined up at the end of the hallway. And I'm walking down the hallway like I'm his freaking running mate. We're just chatting away, and I see all the cameras there. And just before we get to him, I ducked off to the side. but I ruined everybody else's shot.
Is that true, Jim?
That was a win.
I don't remember that, but it would ruin the shot. Although I think Jim Hester was skilled enough to probably frame him out.
or black out my face or something. Do something. Or pixelize me.
Is it? I know it's not because Jim didn't do it, but the reporter to anchor transition, is that something that most journalists, TV journalists, aspire to? Or is it just something that kind of like you get selected because you have a certain talent or a certain Q rating and management recognizes it?
I don't know. What do you think about that?
It's a job that most people aspire to who get in the business, I think. I wanted to be out practicing journalism in the street every day, and I didn't even asked to substitute anchor. I think I did it a couple of times because they needed me to.
Yeah.
But it was not something I wanted to do. But most people do both because it's higher prestige and higher pay.
And it came to mean organically. When I was in Erie, Pennsylvania, I was hired by the CBS station there, and they hired another guy at the same time to be the anchor. And they hired me as a reporter. And the guy that they hired was so bad. I don't know what he did on his resume tape to get him the job, but he got there and there was no way. It was almost like he was trying to be bad. He was that bad. And the general manager came in, I'll never forget it, and he looked around the room and, what about that guy? Maybe that guy should be our anchor. So at the age of 21, I was the 6 and 11 o'clock anchor for the CBS affiliate in Erie, Pennsylvania.
We asked
way ahead of my time. I was trying to keep from drowning.
We had a month ago or so, we had Debbie Knox here, and she is and will always be incredibly beautiful. So we had to ask about her looks.
Yes.
Which we asked about Jim's looks too, because my mother, God rest her soul, had a crush on him big time. It's the eyes.
Wow.
It's the eyes.
Yeah.
Does that matter for men?
Man, what?
Does that matter for men? We know it matters. Let's just assume it matters for female
reporters.
It's
a visual medium. They look for attractive people.
I think it's as long as you're not repelling people. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably
what the hell else can explain Roger Harvey's career?
but also remember Howard Cosell was a TV star.
Yes, that's true.
That's sports. No one's. Did that matter? Do you think it matters in your career?
Sure, it does. As Jim said, it's a visual medium. Of course, it does. To say no would be disingenuous. But I do. I don't consider myself to be, you know, who's Rock Hudson, Tom Cruise? Mm-hmm. Who's the guy today? I don't know. I'm not that guy. I'm maybe I don't repulse people with my appearance, but that's as far as I'd go.
I'm going to let Jim ask the next few questions. I'm going to ask this one real quick and turn over to Jim for a while. Favorite interview you got? Favorite interview you wish you had gotten?
Wow, that's a good one. I can't think of any I wished I'd gotten that I didn't get. But I will say, and this is probably just an easy answer, but when Obama was running for re-election in 2012, I got on the list to go to the White House and interview him. And all politics aside, he's a sitting United States president. I had 8 minutes with him. And I walked out of there thinking, my gosh, for 8 minutes, I had the attention of the most powerful person in the world. Mm-hmm. And he was answering my questions eye to eye, looking at me, and he was giving thoughtful answers to the questions I was asking. And for a kid from Pittsburgh that grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, that was quite a day.
Well, I will say, having interviewed Barack Obama when he was first running in 2008 on a variety of occasions, he did give better answers than most politicians who are running for office. Yeah. Most politicians will gloss over the question you asked and get to their talking points. And, Obama gave a real interview.
Yeah.
I think we need to talk about your switch to politics here a little bit, but you're the Republican mayor of Zionsville.
Yes. Yes.
Did you always consider yourself a Republican?
I always consider myself an independent, and that was my public face too, because back in the day, we took it seriously that you needed to be as neutral as you could be. And I would vote, and you know, where I live in Boone County, if you don't vote in the Republican primary, you don't get a vote, because most of the time, Democratic candidates are unchallenged if they run at all. Mm-hmm. So the real election was really the primary. So I think that was part of it, but I found even in general elections, almost every single time, I would vote for the Republican candidate over the course of my life. And by the way, I've never missed an election. I turned 18 in 1976, the first year that 18-year-olds could vote. And I've never missed one, no matter where I was. I always made sure, no matter what the vote was, I've always voted. So I'm proud of that record.
I can match it. Yeah. So I guess I see, as a political reporter, Indiana is different than most states. I grew up in Minnesota, where they have open primaries. And here you have to declare Republican or Democrat, and it becomes part of the public record. And so right. Dealing with politicians, I would have politicians all the time look up and see how I'd voted.
Yeah. But
I would alternate so that I didn't create a record. And clearly you didn't trouble yourself with that.
I didn't. And again, in Boone County, there aren't a lot of Democrats that run.
It makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense. So what made you decide to run for office?
We talked about this a little bit earlier when we started in journalism, and how it was almost a calling. And I felt like it was a service to the public. I really held that very dear and really believed that. And it became less so as time went on, as the business changed, as the things required of us changed. And when I left broadcasting, I left a little bit early. I retired a little bit younger than I probably should have.
How come?
I had a heart issue. I don't know if you remember that. I had an aneurysm, and I had that repaired. You know, it was an open heart procedure. And what I say is, when you can only sit around and think, you tend to sit around and think. Yeah. And I just came to the point where I thought, I've got to find something new in life, got to find a new direction. So when I left Channel 13, I was appointed to the Parks Board in Zionsville. And I found that when you're retired and you can stand in the mud with a contractor at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, they make you an officer pretty fast. So I became the president of the Parks Board within a short period of time. And I really enjoyed the process and being able to do things that were meaningful to the community and all that. And then we had a dysfunctional relationship between our former mayor and the former council. And from the point of view that I had as president of the Parks Board, I could see that what's really missing here is any modicum of communication. Now, I can help with that. I can communicate better and bring these parties together. Hey, I have time. I'm retired. Why not? Why not give it a shot? That's why I decided to run. And I will tell you, I won't tell you on the podcast here, but I'll tell you later. There was a politician who I'd gotten to know over the years. So I called him for some advice. And he said, give me a 10-word answer why you should run. And I said, because I want the town we all love to do better. 10 words. He said, that's great. Now give me 10 words why it's you. And I thought about it and I said, because I have the communication skills to do the job. And he said, okay, you're ready. And I filed the paperwork the next day. So that was all I needed to hear.
And what every politician seeks is name ID, and you already had it.
Yeah, that was helpful. I mean, obviously that was helpful.
The previous mayor of Zionsville, she's a Democrat, is that correct?
Yes. Emily Styron.
But we were talking about Boone County being Republican.
There was a set of circumstances at the time, and she worked for Goldsmith, Mayor Goldsmith, so she had a background in, I guess that was the extent of her background in politics, but it was mostly on the Republican side. So I think she was seen by a lot of people as someone who is at least moderate, somebody we could work with. And there was a couple of issues with some things that happened under the previous mayor, and I think people were, you know, willing to take a chance.
And did you, being an anchor, not only to Jim's point, send your name ID through the roof, but also you're not out necessarily turning stories in politics like Kevin Rader did, but like Jim did.
Right.
So it's easier to appear to be or to be neutral? Because Jim turns stories, and I know he gets used to, and he'd get calls.
My neutrality was always very important to me. Jim was operating in a different realm than I was. So no, it didn't seem to be a big issue with people.
Clearly you won the primary easily, and you had no opponent in the fall. So.
Yes. And that was nice. And I'll tell you what that did was, it gave me an opportunity to prepare. And I started my transition process in August because I didn't have to worry about the November election. I think people that have just 6 weeks or maybe a couple of months to prepare, there's a lot to do in a short amount of time. So I had a great transition team. We have fantastic people in Zionsville that are all willing to step up and help. And so I think we were able to hit the ground running a little bit. And I guess we'll see at the end of
You've got
a term how people feel that I've done.
You've got Mr. Jim Voiles.
We have Jim Voiles. Absolutely.
And you have David Rosenberg, who runs the IEDC.
Yes, indeed.
Ryan Vaughn, I believe, just moved.
He just moved there. He's a new constituent. Yeah,
that's right. And Darren Kintner, those three are all...
He's on the RDC now because he's in town. So, yes. I was happy to appoint him, and I have high hopes for him. So
incredibly talented alumni of the Ballard administration.
And Jim Voiles has always been, I wouldn't say a friend, but somebody that I've known for a long time. And we always joke with him that if you're on TV and you're standing next to Jim Voiles, you're in big trouble. And while I've had his number in my phone, I haven't had to use it professionally. So I always felt good about that, too.
Go ahead, Jim.
What are your plans for Zionsville?
That was actually my question.
I think that we need to take a look at where we're heading economically. Right now, our tax base is out of balance. We have a very high percentage of our tax money that comes from property owners, and it doesn't come from the corporate world or from commercial properties. Commercial property tax revenue can grow at 3% a year. Personal income or personal property taxes can only grow at 1% a year. So if you have a town that is growing at 2 or 3% in population, it doesn't take a math genius to figure out that at some point, you're not going to be able to provide the services that you need.
Those are handcuffs that Mitch Daniels gave you.
Yes, he did.
Better than the chaos that preceded it.
No, I and it's they amended the state constitution. So there's no going back. We've got to live with the cards that we have. But I think that there are ways to raise our commercial tax base to make it a little more equitable for everybody and give us the ability to provide the services we need.
Can you maintain the small town atmosphere?
I think so. I think it's still there. When I moved to Zionsville, there were less than 8,000 people. Now there's about 35,000 people. But when I was going around campaigning, I can't even tell you how many times I ran into somebody that our kids were on a soccer team together or some class or some activity or something. So I think that small town feeling still exists there in a way that I haven't felt it in other places, maybe because I'm not a part of those other places. But I think that's very important to the atmosphere in Zionsville, and I think people take it very seriously.
You drove into Indianapolis almost every day.
I did.
So you saw, the big town atmosphere.
Yes.
Are there things you learned from Indianapolis governance, either private or public, that you're like, that could work in Zionsville?
One thing about politicians, and Jim just touched on it here, that there are a lot of politicians that just don't want to answer your questions. They just want to say what they want to say. And I've always found that very frustrating. Maybe that's why I couldn't be a political reporter, because you dealt with that every single day.
You're kicking my livelihood in the groin, you know,
just being honest.
Mayor Stare.
And when politicians duck you, and there's one current or former mayor, I'll give you that would never take my calls. Now he takes my calls, but he wouldn't take my calls before. And if you're elected to a position, it is your duty to answer questions, just like it's a reporter's job to ask the questions. If you're representing a constituency, your job is to answer those questions. Even if the answer is, I don't know, or we're still working on that.
Or I know and I can't tell you.
Not a satisfying answer, but it's an answer. Mm-hmm. And I think reporters deserve that. So all the reporters that are in my realm with the local paper and the Garrett and other people that are covering, they have my personal cell phone number and they can call me at any time and I will always give them an answer.
There's a lot happening up northern part of the state. Let's say the northern part of the donuts, donut counties. Mayor Jensen, who I worked with at the state party 15 or so years ago, Mayor of Noblesville, fabulous. Scott Fadness has already made his mark with more to come. Obviously, you have a new mayor of Carmel, Sue Finkham. How much do you guys talk to each other or learn from each other?
A lot.
Steal from each other.
And they've been very helpful to me, those that have had some experience there. And Sue and I have been in close contact as we've gone through the campaign. And Scott Willis in Westfield, he and I are following a very similar path in that we're first-time mayors. We are coming into dysfunctional situations that we need to repair. So he and I talk quite a bit. And also Matt Gentry in Lebanon.
Oh, yeah.
He and I have become better friends. He went to school with my son.
Oh, really?
So, there's a connection there, right? But it's been good. And
he was youngest mayor in the state at one point, right?
His dad, Mike, is an exceptionally talented political mind, for sure.
And I'll tell you, Matt is a talented mayor. And I think he's done great things for Lebanon. And he's been involved in the LEAP process, and that is going to be one of the things that is going to guide all of Boone County in the coming years. 75 counties in Indiana lose population each year, so that leaves, 17? Is that right? Am I doing my math right
there? Yeah, correct.
That gain population. We're one of those. And if I needed to have a problem, I'd rather have the problem we have than the other one.
And with the influx of population in that part of the metropolitan area, Carmel is concentrating on creating density. They want four-story building. While Westfield is talking about maintaining single-family
right.
homes. Do you feel any pressure from either side there?
I think that we have to have development that's going to be smart development. We don't want a bunch of apartment buildings in Zionsville. The people clearly don't want that. Although that has to be part of the answer, because housing stock, the average price for a home in Zionsville is over $600,000. There aren't that many people that can afford a $600,000 house. So we have to find a way to accommodate the people that want to live there. Our teachers, our firefighters, our police officers, they should have the ability to live in our community, and a lot of them don't right now. So that's something that I think we really have to look at. I just saw a study the other day that in Boone County, the population is expected to double between now and 2050. And those people need to be housed somehow, some way. So there's going to have to be solutions that meet the need that we have. I know it's a need all over the state, but I think it's especially acute in Boone County, given what's happening there, what's coming there economically.
Was it weird the first time you were on the other side of the microphone?
A little bit. We joke about that. I was at a meeting this morning for CERDA, the Central Indiana sure. Regional Development Authority, and these are all the people in the room that used to run away from me. And now I'm one of them, so they can't run anymore. But no, it's good. And I appreciate the opportunity to do something to serve my community. All five of my kids grew up in Zionsville. That's my home. That's where I'm going to stay. I'm not going to move to Florida or Arizona. I'm a Zionsville guy, and I want to see Zionsville do better. And I have the communication skills to do the job. There you go.
10 words.
10 words.
You've heard of the Indiana Leadership Forum?
I have.
And I was a member of the class of 2002. It's okay. Currently run by the impeccable and marvelous Jennifer Hollowell, my mm-hmm. former boss at State
yeah.
Party.
Yeah.
So in 2002, we had one of our meetings. We had the media show up to mm-hmm. do a panel. Mm-hmm. We were at Emmis. Mr. Smolian gave us this space.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be, Jim was part of it, and there was a couple of others, maybe Mary Beth Schneider. Got to be Jim's turn.
Mm-hmm.
He says, all right, let's stop all this nonsense. Who thinks the media has a liberal bias? And he and I argued about it for 5 minutes straight. Right. I didn't even really know him.
Right.
Because I'd started in politics, but nothing that would have caught Mr. Shella's attention. Is it something, when you're talking about diversity with regard to reporters, that there's not enough of ideological diversity? Shella, you'll get your turn.
I don't think that's true. I think that people have diversity of thought, and different people have different thoughts. I'll tell you just a quick story. The AIM,
Accelerating Indiana Municipality.
Okay, so I went to New Mayor's School. So I'm there with a bunch of new mayors, big conference room, people from all over the state, and we had a media panel. And they were talking, and I could see how scared the mayors were about having to deal with the media. And I said, can I say something? I said, these people up here are not your enemies, but they're not your partners either. Their job is to ask the questions. Your job is to answer them. And it's as simple as that. And if you're answering their questions honestly, that's the best way forward for everybody. It's better for them, better for you, better for your constituents. It's just not that hard. It really isn't that hard. Shouldn't be that hard.
Well, I think that's right. I think that's right. And there are reporters who have biases, who have political leanings. But if they're good reporters, it doesn't get into their work. And you can separate the two.
Yeah.
There were never an issue where either one of you covered where you really had to fight your sympathies for this person or this point of view?
Not me.
What I would tell you is that a number of times I would be working on a story that clearly had two sides to the story. And you would go out and you would interview the person on one side and you'd walk away and go, wow, that's a compelling case. I don't know how the other side can compete with that. And then you'd talk to the other side and you'd go, hold on, there is something here. But you can't, early on when you're a reporter, I think you learn that you can't make judgments without all the information.
And yeah, I think that's true. In my current job, I feel that way too. There are things that I'd like to accomplish. And I know there are going to be naysayers that are there. But just because they're naysayers doesn't mean we shouldn't listen to their voice and respect their voice and respect what they have to say. I just think that's, I don't know, that's being a good human being, right?
We've reached the point in the Leaders and Legends podcast where we ask the same five questions of all of our guests.
My favorite color is green. Is that one?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Jim, do you want to ask the questions of the Sagamore of a Wabash recipient, John Stair, yeah. Indiana Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. Let's see here. Best anchor, 2 regional Emmys. Is that correct?
Silver Circle.
Did a deep dive here.
Right.
That's exactly right. Gannon University Distinguished Alumni Award. The only member of your graduating class. Whoever wrote your bio on your website did a phenomenal job.
I'll have to thank them.
Yeah. He's in the Emmy Silver Circle, which is basically an Emmy for lifetime achievement.
Which Jim was also
It's the only way I know about it.
Yeah.
All right. Question number one. What was your first job?
My dad had a landscaping company, and I started working with him when I was, I'd go occasionally when I was 11. Yeah, by the time I got to be 12, that was my full-time job. It made me really decide that I needed to go to college because that's a hard way to make a living.
Well, my dad was an electrical contractor, and I started working for him in junior high.
Oh, is that right?
It came to the same conclusion.
Yes.
What was your
first concert? Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh was about 1974 or 5. The Eagles, Boss Gags, and somebody else. I can't remember. Oh, Fleetwood Mac.
That's
Fleetwood
a good
Mac, the Eagles, and
That's
Boss Gags.
That's a good bill.
Yes. Boss Gags, he was the warm-up at that time.
Oh, so, yeah, I would imagine. Opening, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Number three, if you could suggest any book for someone to read, what book would you recommend?
I'm a big reader, and I just read a book called The Midnight Library, if you remember that. So I go back and forth between historical books or maybe a biography, autobiography, and then fiction. This is a fiction book. I think it's a bestseller right now, but it's really very compelling, makes you think a lot about life and how you view life. And you know. So Midnight Library would be only because it's the most recent one. I just finished it.
Number four.
Yes.
If you could witness any event in history, be there in person as it happens, what event would you choose?
I'll tell you, I really appreciate Abraham Lincoln. And in fact, somebody asked me when I was running, what politician do you admire? I thought, Lincoln? Couldn't really come up with anybody modern day. But Lincoln, I appreciate him. To be... It's macabre, isn't it, to say to be at his assassination?
You want to be at Ford's Theater or do you want to be at Gettysburg?
That's a good question. One of them. I think one of them would be my choice. That what happened at Ford's Theater was, I think, a transitional period in the history of our country. So probably Ford's Theater.
We haven't gotten that answer before.
Yeah. We've gotten Lincoln stuff, but we haven't gotten, hey, I want to see him. And then actually, you can go on YouTube. I don't know if you've seen this. But it's a famous show 60 years ago, 70 years ago called I Have a Secret.
Oh, I remember the show. Yeah. I remember watching it, but I know what about it.
Yes. One of their guests was in Ford's Theater.
Oh, is that right?
The night he was shot.
Wow.
Question number five. If you could have dinner with anyone living today, 2 hours off the record, whom would you choose?
Wow. That's a good question.
Now you know how I feel when Siegel or Chapman or Sierra Putman is on the other side.
So someone who's living today, they have to be alive today?
Yes, sir.
Wow. I don't know. The mind is racing. I'll tell you what. I have 3 daughters. 2 of them are 25. One of them is 17. So I'm going to say Taylor Swift, and I would bring them along. How about that?
I don't think we've had a Taylor Swift answer, Jim.
That's a great answer. That's a great answer. Can Travis Kelce be there?
Sure. I would be a hero to my daughters forever if I could arrange that. So can you help me out with that? Can you help me out with that?
I don't know any of them, although I've got a sister in Kansas who's a huge Chiefs fan. As well as a Swiftie, I think.
You have been listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast presented by Veteran Strategies, an Indiana-based public relations enterprise, and sponsored by Garmond Construction, Leaders and Legends LLC, the Grand Hall and Conference Center at Historic Union Station, the McGinley's Golden Ace Inn, and NFP, a national insurance broker with strong local content. As always, all our podcast interviews are dedicated to the legacy and generosity of P.E. McAllister. Our guest today has been John Stair, the mayor of Zionsville. He came into your living rooms for more than two decades.
Yes, almost 25 years.
And he did so with grace, with trust, and with really, if you watched him, a terrific sense of humor. Thank you so much, Mayor, for coming on the podcast.
Robert, thank you. I really appreciate it. Jim, always good to see you.
Yeah, and thanks for that phone call in 1982.
you're welcome. You're welcome. I would make it again.
Thank you very much for listening to Leaders and Legends, brought to you by Veteran Strategies Incorporated. If you want to contact us about this program or our menu of public relations services, please send us an email at robert@veteranstrategies.com. That's robert@veteranstrategies.com.